Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome back to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest and only Doom Patrol podcast, where we talk about all things Doom Patrol because we love the Doom Patrol. But this week, it's going to be a bit crazy because we're doing another controversial, topsy-turvy Bats in the Fishbowl episode.
What do you mean, Mike?
You'll find out. You'll find out.
Okay. I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. You can send emails to our show account, which is waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, and episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDPod. And this week we have a very special guest joining us for the first time. It's, I guess, the silent partner of Waiting for Doom, the man who makes it all possible on Paul's end of things. It's James, a.k.a. Rifty.
Hello, world. I'm sorry, I've been waiting to say that for a long time. Hey, thank you for having me on the show. It's fantastic to be here. Yes, I remember way back when, week one, a very sorrowful Paul coming knocking on my back door asking if he can use the internet because he's trying to piggyback off of the public library internet. Didn't work.
Yes, I'm just a poor refugee without internet.
Oh, dear.
Okay, today on the show, it's movie day on Waiting for Doom. We've all been to see Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice, and we've got fresh thoughts unsullied by the groupthink of the internet. So we're going to bring that to you, but we're going to do it in a spoiler shield format so you can have all the good things that you like about the show without any spoilers. And so we'll bring everything that was at the back of the show to the front so you can listen to the Doom Clock, the Mailbag of Doom, and then we will do Doomsplaining.
Yes.
So if you don't want to hear anything about Batman vs Superman, we've got it covered. So yeah,
we've got the spoiler shield at the ready. I've got Wilfred on standby to activate it for us. So yeah.
Awesome. Yes. Anyway, let's start with you, James. How was your week in comics?
Fairly unusual week in comics this week. Me and Mrs. Rift went on a little holiday getaway to a tiny little town. And lo and behold, there was a comic book store there. I couldn't believe it. I know. It was quite amazing. The first afternoon we got there, we were driving down the main street and definitely thought I saw something out of the corner of my eye, and I'm like, no, surely I'm seeing things. And then we went for a walk later that afternoon, and there it was. The Holy Grail appeared in front of me.
your geek radar went into overtime and found it post haste.
Oh, totally did. We were walking to dinner, and it was it was really good. So the next day, next morning, we jumped in there and trolled through the bargain bins. And found some gems from Mike.
Yes.
It was fantastic.
Thank you very much. I was getting all these exciting messages about, oh, have you got this issue of Detective Comics or this one? And I was like, oh, my God, where are you?
The random finds, I tell you.
Yeah.
It was very interesting.
Awesome.
But, beyond that, I got my comics in the mail. So that has Martian Manhunter, the current run of that. That's a very interesting take on the character. It's been most enjoyable. And the Batman Ninja Turtles too, that definitely stands out. It's a fun little one, that one. It's only got two issues to go, so hope that wraps up nicely.
Cool.
Awesome. Does look fun. Great art. What about you, Mike? How has your week in comics been?
Not as exciting as Rifty's. I read a few more comics, but I still have far too many sitting in the pile there. I got through 4 issues of Dr. Fate, so that was good fun. And he's sort of finally accepting that, yes, he has superpowers and he can actually save people and do the right thing. It just sort of took 10 issues to get there. But it was okay. And I finally read the final issue of The Fade Out, which I think finished 2 or 3 months ago. So that had a very, 1940s/50s Hollywood noir ending that wasn't exactly happy. So, yeah, I was, and that's pretty much it. I've kind of not done much else except for wait for a certain film to get launched this week, really. So,
what film was that? Was there a film coming out this week?
Yes. Wait a minute. Where, what? What about you, Paul? What's been happening in your week, comics-wise?
I'm all about old comics at the moment, so I've been rereading some Hawk and Doves, and so from the 80s, actually. Yeah. And a bit of Manhunter from the Mark Andreyko Jesus Size series. So,
okay.
Yeah, and that's quite good, quite interesting to revisit that stuff. A lot of it I haven't remembered, and a lot of it's worth looking at again, yeah. But other than that, it's pretty quiet. I read Sex Criminals Volume 2 from the library. That was quite amusing. Mm-hmm. Kept passing it to my wife and saying, read this bit. And she's looking at me like I'm an idiot. So, right. Yeah. So it's our marriage as usual.
Marriage.
Yeah, but apart from that, I think I hear some ticking.
Nicely saved by the doom clock. Yeah. Okay, so looking at the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that, surprise, surprise, no change since the last book that we had of the Doom Patrol. It is still issue 22 of volume 5 from the Giffen Clark run, cover date of July 2011 and going on sale May 4th of that same year. So it's now been 4 years and 46 weeks since the last book. We might have to do a special episode when we finally hit the 5-year mark for that book.
Happy birthday to nothing.
Is it like AA meetings when you get a badge or a token with so many sobriety weeks or something like that?
It's been 5 years since we had a Doom Patrol book. Yeah, I like it. Tokens for everyone.
Mike.
Easy to organise tokens and bloody ponies. It's been 32 weeks since we had appearances of the team in 2 different comics. So about 8 months ago, we saw them in All-Star Section 8, Issue 3, with a cameo in the background of a big Justice League hero-type meeting. And Justice League United number 12 had a one-panel appearance of the team with Stargirl recruiting Robot Man to join her on her next mission. But this week in Doom Patrol history, back in 1991 for US $1.50, saw the release of issue 44 of volume 2 from Grant Morrison and Richard Case. If you're suddenly experiencing deja vu, that's probably because we only just recently covered that issue back in episode 48. So just 2 episodes ago. And yes, this was the issue which had the conclusion of the storyline with Flex, Mentallo and the Patrol taking on the Men from Nowhere in the ant farm beneath the Pentagon. And if you find that sentence confusing, you should just go listen to episode 48. Or if you want the whole saga of the team meeting Danny the Street, going to outer space, getting caught up in a war, then coming home and meeting Flex, you can listen to episodes 31, 35, 38, and then 48.
Ugh.
And that should probably make up for the lack of actual Doom Patrol content in this episode. But that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
And now, in our crazy out-of-order format, we're on to the Mailbag of Doom. And last week on the show, we asked everyone, what's the most rewatchable comic book-based movie? And we got a crap ton of answers. Mm. So, firstly, we heard from Dr. Ange, who said, absolutely no-brainer, The Rocketeer. Perfectly captured that book. Great story. Wonderful. Yeah, I love The Rocketeer myself. Cool. It's a great film. Yeah.
We heard from @Panderson_art, a.k.a. Brian Panderson, and he said, I've seen The Crow more than any other, but of the modern crop, I'd say Winter Soldier is the one I keep coming back to.
Oh, The Crow. Yeah. Full of teenage-y angst. I remember the soundtrack. It was hugely popular when I was a kid. Yeah. High rotation.
Yeah, yeah. I saw that when I was a teen as well. And, it was a big film then, yeah.
We heard from Karthik Karkarella, who's Hero Word Elder. So he's gradually, incrementally changing his name on Twitter every time. Yeah. He said one word, Dread.
Good call. Good call.
Pretty sweet film.
Yeah. Bobgar Onellis at Slermo. He also said Dread. But before that, it was League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Yep, I like that one. It's fun. But yeah, both good calls. Yeah.
No, Dread's a good call. LXG was garbage.
Wow.
Sorry.
Opinions.
We have from Matt Roberts, Mr. Oberts, and he said, real answer is Winter Soldier, but fake answer is Road to Perdition.
Yeah. Right.
At least it's clarifying it for us. I like that. That makes it easy.
Yeah, yeah. Doug Zavisha at D. Zavisha, this week known as Zavisha Patrol, said Guardians of the Galaxy. I was going to say Cap, First Avenger, but even my parents will sit down to watch Guardians again.
Yeah. Wow. Then we heard from Martin Gray, who he said, the Justice League TV film. Cheap, cheerful, and just huge fun. You're insane, Martin.
I remember that one too. I had it on VHS. It was recorded off Foxtel back in the day.
Jeez.
I didn't know what I was watching. It was darn terrible.
So if I ever have the chance, I should just avoid it then?
It's not great.
Right.
It's great to watch it for a whole holistic appeal, so you've seen all of its incarnations, but
right.
You'll definitely come away going, wow.
Okay. we heard from Aaron Myers, at Aaron Myers, and he said, obviously, Flash Gordon. Yeah, that was a big one for me when I was a kid, yeah.
Yeah. We heard from Stana Helena, and she's Anna Helena. And she said, in her personal opinion, which is good because she's qualified in that, it's a tie between the first Keaton Burton Batman and Deadpool. Yeah. I've only seen Deadpool once, but it's I would rewatch that.
Haven't seen Deadpool, but big thumbs up for that Batman film. Yeah. Alias Saul Bishop at Arch Enemy Comics said, when I was a kid, it was Superman, the movie. As a teen, it was The Crow. Yeah. And for these days, it's Guardians of the Galaxy. I feel like if I owned Dread, this could be my answer. I need to correct this oversight.
And then him and Karthik got in great big discussion about all the reasons to own Dread and lots of running out and buying it. Anyway, we heard from Katie Solovan at Katie Scarlet 94, and she said, obviously, Captain America, the Winter Soldier. Because she lusts after Bucky, I believe.
I think they're engaged or something. Yeah, or they're getting married. Something. Yeah, she keeps going on about that guy for some reason. Yeah,
it's his emo haircut, isn't it?
Probably, yeah. Nicholas at Nick RDE said, I do sit through a lot of the Marvel Avengers Universe movies, often with the kids.
Mm.
Okay.
They are popular with the kids, those ones, for sure.
Okay.
We heard from Mike Lapine at Lapine Is Me on Twitter, and he said, got to be Dread. That's the only comic book-based movie I own. Well, another vote for Dread. That's quite a pile there.
Moby One at Shmoby One said, it's hard to pick between Superman 2, Avengers 1, and Iron Man 1.
Mm. All good choices.
Yeah.
Hard to pick indeed. We heard from Will Fish, and he said, The Dark Knight, and then he gave an honourable mention to Captain America, the Winter Soldier, Captain America, the First Avenger, Dark Knight Returns, the cartoon, the DC animated one, and Conan the Barbarian. Good all rewatchable, yes.
Yeah. We heard from Doc Comics, at Doc Comics Is In. I think
new
he's
listener.
A first-time listener, replier, responder person. Doc Comics said Star Wars Episode 4, Blues Brothers, Ghostbusters, and that Kevin Smith's Red Bank saga, which is Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Giant Son of Bob Strike Back, and Clerks 2.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Comic book related, I would say. But yeah, good choices there.
Yeah.
I could always watch Mallrats anytime.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, Mallrats was good. Clerks 2 is... It's very funny, but has terrible sexual connotations in that movie that make everyone feel awkward, but they're like a train wreck. You just can't look away.
Okay.
We heard from Book Girl, who's at Anise22, and she said, Batman Returns, Superman, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Wonder Woman, JL Doom, The Avengers, Superman, Batman, Apocalypse. So getting a few of the DC animateds in there. Yeah, good choices there. I love that Wonder Woman animated. It's fantastic. Iron Man 2, Captain America, Blade Trinity, Lego Batman, Batman Mask of Phantasm, the Batman vs. Dracula, and Batman Superman movie.
Wow.
So, wow, that's a lot of stuff.
A lot of rewatching, yeah.
I was going to say, she just went with all of them.
All the movies. Susan Cotton at Josie underscore Mummy said, Marvel's The Avengers with Captain America The Winter Soldier a close second. Another Bucky fan by the sounds of it.
It's the hair. It's got the ladies, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
We had from Astrakis One, who's Milkier Wet Nave Tech this week, and he said, for me, it's the first Avengers film. Marvel did a great job setting it all up, and it paid off. Have to agree with that. Marvel's Avengers is a great film.
Mm.
Yeah. And then we have to jump over to the Facebook, where we heard from Garujo, at Greg Arujo, and he said that he really loves the Batman Adam West movie, his most rewatchable one. I haven't seen that for years, but I would quite like to. And then I'd probably get half an hour into it and say, no, I don't really want to watch this, I reckon.
the shark repellent bat spray is one of the things that hangs in my mind from that movie. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm. And the last thing left in the Mailbag of Doom is we got an email from Moby One, Stefan, our friend. And he said, hi, Wilfred. Just wanted to write and express my appreciation for episode 49. Too many good moments to mention in a tweetable size. He said, he loves the idea of a digital Doom Patrol series done in an off-the-wall spirit of the era discussed in the episode. Yeah, that's a good idea. Unleashed a massive wahaha, Ree Martin's Better Than Dinner with Gargawax podcast review comment.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very much in agreement with Dr. Ange and Paul that the need for a Teen Titans rebirth. And he says he can't wait for episode 50 if episode 49 is anything to go by. You don't have to wait. It's here now.
Yes.
And he said, congratulations in anticipation of reaching next week's milestone episode. I'll be raising a glass to you, even without any mentions of Cliff's mishaps. In like Flynn for the next 50. Cheers from Moby One, at Moby One.
Thanks, Moby.
Yeah.
I get that. That's great.
Cheers. Cheers.
Cheers, everyone. Yeah. All right, guys. What's your most rewatchable film?
Okay, so on the Twitters, I went with the Christopher Reeves, Superman 1 and 2. And mm-hmm. the first Tim Burton Batman and Iron Man 1, definitely those four you could put on at any time and I'd be happy to sit down and watch them. They're all fantastic.
Cool.
I've got to go with Scott Pilgrim. Scott Pilgrim. I love
Scott
that.
Pilgrim.
Really?
Oh, the wives don't want to hear this episode. No.
Wives hate it.
The wives hate it. Absolutely.
Wow. I've got to say I'm a bit surprised by that answer, Paul.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Right. Wouldn't have pegged it.
No. I'd still like yelling out, we are sex bomb right now. Yell it out.
What about you, Mike? You got one?
I'm going to say, it's a tie between the first Tim Burton Batman film that had a big impact on me, and I really love that film, and the Avengers first film as well. That was just so well done and such a great coming together of all the Marvel heroes we had seen at that point. So, yeah, I really equal tie for those two for me. I could sit down and watch them any time.
Mm.
Well, one question. All the answers from the Mailbag of Doom for Dread. This may be a silly question, but is that the Sylvester Stallone Dread or the Carl Urban Dread? Because the Carl Urban Dread was fantastic.
I think it's pretty safe to say it would be the Carl Urban Dread.
I think
I'm sure that that's probably what it was, but I just wanted to clarify that one. All right, very good.
Yeah, the Stallone Dread. Oh, jeez.
I don't know what that was.
Yeah. I am the law. Sorry.
That's a great impersonation. I
thanks.
Like that.
Thanks. I worked on it for a whole second.
All right, so we're getting closer to doomsplaining, but we should probably mention what's on the show next week.
Yes.
So, we have another special guest. We've got comic writer Jay Torres from Canada on the show. So we're going to be, and he's been writing the Doom Patrol, though people may not have noticed. Mm. So we're going to talk to him about what he's got coming up with some things he's working on right now and the work he did on the Doom Patrol in a few different comics from DC. And we have a question of the week next week. And what are the best comics for kids? That's what we want to know. But now, I guess that's the end of the regular bit of the show, and we're near the spoiler shield.
Yes.
You want to activate it, Mike?
Everyone get ready. We just so you're clear, I'm going to get Wilfred to activate the spoiler shield. So if you haven't seen Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, turn off now. Okay? So, Wilfred.
Yes, human.
Will you please activate the spoiler shield?
Fine. This show would be nothing without me.
Okay, we can go from here on.
Okay, let me paint a picture. Today is Thursday, the 24th of March, and it's Mike took the day off work, and I took the day off work, and James isn't working today. He's not unemployed, he's just not working today. So we all went to our local cinemas and mm-hmm. saw the very first available session of Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Yes.
And I don't know about you, Mike, but at my session, it looked like there was a special invitation out to, you know, middle-aged men with beards.
And I'm happy to say Paul and I fit the bill perfectly. It's all good.
I had a bit more of a gender balance at mine, I must say. There were quite a few couples at mine and, yeah, possibly even slightly more women at mine.
Oh, bullshit.
No, I swear to God, wouldn't lie to you guys, you know? It was
Henry Cavill for sure. He's a good man, isn't he?
He's a dreamboat.
And he's got his shirt off in the movie.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, and Ben Affleck. Whoa. I mean, sorry, Gal Gadot. Whoa.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry, we should be focusing on the ladies, but terrible mistake.
Sorry, continue, Paul, as you were. Sorry to interrupt your monologue.
Okay, so we, James and I went to the 10:30 session at Goulburn this morning, so and got out of that, and we've had a little bit of discussion around it already. And you went to the 11:30 session in Brisbane.
My local Westfield Chermside Cinemas, which is literally 10 minutes walk from my house. So it was nice and handy. And yes, I've been home maybe about 45 minutes collecting my thoughts on the whole affair. So yeah.
It's a little bit overwhelming, isn't it? There's a lot going on in this film. Mm. But shall we start with immediate reactions? So, Mike, is Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice a good film?
Yes, it is. I had a think about this, and I would give it a solid 7 out of 10. I think it's a good film, but it didn't blow me away as much as I thought it would.
Right. What about you, James? Where do you stand?
Yeah, I'm very much the same. I thought it was a good movie. It has its issues. I don't want to jump on the negative bandwagon that the Twitter seems to be today with it, but my initial reaction, I did like it, but it does have some issues.
Yeah, I'm going to drive the negative wagon today. All aboard.
All aboard the misery mobile.
No, well, I mean, I firstly, you have to qualify, it's not, like, it's a well-made film. It's, you know, everything is well done in it. It's well acted. It's mm-hmm. not the Fantastic Four from last year, it's a complete mess. It's not Amazing Spider-Man, where the story is utter garbage and it's wretched. yeah, but I will say it is a dark and miserable movie. It is a film that opens with a funeral and it ends with a funeral, yeah. And everything between is dire.
That's our show, folks. Good night.
That pretty much sums it up, unfortunately, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, so trying to remember what happened, I think it opened with the flashback of the funeral of the Waynes.
Yes.
Martha and Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we all need another Batman origin reminder, just in case anyone forgot.
Yeah.
So little representation of that in the media. Yeah. How Batman's parents died. So, and from there it sort of jumped to some modern day stuff with Lois doing her investigative journalist thing somewhere in Africa mm-hmm. and getting taken prisoner and Superman showing up, but there's also gunmen there who turn out they work for Luthor. There's the flashback of what happened in Metropolis, which was pretty interesting, actually. I liked the different view of the Battle of Metropolis.
Yeah, that was really well done, seeing Bruce arrive in Metropolis just as all hell is breaking loose, as we saw in Man of Steel. That was really well done, yeah.
Yeah, trying to get my head around what happened next. Then we had we caught up with that guy who had his legs lost and he vandalized the statue. We had that media montage of how people think of Superman. You know, is he a god? Is he one of us? Do we have any obligations to him? Does he have any obligations to us? All that heavy stuff.
That just didn't stop for the rest of the movie. Zack Snyder moral sledgehammer was swinging wildly that one, I tell you.
Yeah, just a bit, yeah. It kind of stopped a little bit after that explosion during the Senate hearing, but we'll get to that.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, and we're introduced to Lex and the people looking for bits of kryptonite in the remains of the world engines and things. And the plot seemed, I think it could have been streamlined a bit. It's a little bit overly convoluted, and when you think back, it probably doesn't need to be. So, yeah, basically, Superman, there's controversial opinions about him. Some people are in favour and some people think he's the worst thing to ever happen. Certainly, I would say he's the worst thing that ever happened to Metropolis.
especially for property prices. Jesus.
Oh, my God, yeah.
We've got a Batman who's been doing the Batman thing for 20 years and has started to brand people.
That was an interesting decision.
Yeah.
It wasn't the part of the writers, I mean, having Bats do that. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't really unpacked either. So, I mean, you can hypothesize and say that something happened to Batman to make him get worse, and then you see the vandalized Robin costume at some point. So perhaps that was something that made Batman, you know, take off the gloves, as it were. But branding people's never been a Batman thing in the comics. I've never seen that. It's a little bit Phantom.
But it is very Phantom, wasn't it?
Just a little bit hotter.
Clark is overly interested in how bad Batman is for Gotham, and both of them being pushed to be suspicious and resentful to each other. So, you know, Bruce gets things in the mail, you know, about Superman and reminding him of everything that happened in Metropolis. And
Yes.
Anyway, so there's a guy who Bruce pulled from the wreckage of the building in Metropolis whose legs were sort of crushed. And we see later he has lost his legs. And he rocks up to the Superman Memorial Statue, which commemorates all the people who died in the Battle of Metropolis. And for some reason, they thought it good to put a great big statue of Superman there, which I don't think they would do in real life, but that's what they did. So he climbs up on it and vandalizes it, and then he gets arrested. And then I'm doing things out of order really, but let's follow this plot. He is bailed out by Lex Luthor and given a bitchin' chair.
Now that's an action chair. That man had an action chair if ever I saw one.
At the same time, there are congressional hearings going on about Superman's role in the world, and the military are seeking responses, and Luthor is talking to the military and the government and basically saying, you know, I can create anti-Superman weapons if you guys let me. And the military are quite down with that, and they give him access to the spaceship that crashed in the middle of Metropolis.
Yeah,
and they give him Zod's body, and he's also been collecting this kryptonite stuff. But Holly Hunter, who's sort of her motivation's a little unclear in the movie. She's opposed to Superman, but she's also opposed to Luthor, I guess.
She's kind of on the fence with both of them. It's like, you know, she wants to hold Supes accountable, but she, you know, doesn't want to play ball with Luthor either. So it's like,
Yes. So that plot comes to a head where Supes fronts up in front of the congressional committee. led by Holly Hunter. Lex Luthor is there with his bodyguard Mercy, and he actually leaves the room before the session starts. And the bloke in the action chair is there, and Holly Hunter has a because of a conversation she had earlier with Luthor about something like, "You can give me a jar of piss, and it won't be the same as my grandma's peach tea, no matter what you say." And
yeah.
And she's sitting there, and she notices as she's about to speak that she has a jar of suspect-looking liquid in front of her, which is labelled Grandma's Peach Tea, and that really throws her off. Mm-hmm. Just in time for everyone to look at the guy in the wheelchair, his action chair packed full of electronics, which suddenly explodes and wipes out everyone in that congressional hearing in a very spectacular explosion. Mm-hmm. And Lois is outside with the crowd to witness that. Yeah, and I thought this would be a setup, so they would be framing Superman for killing everyone in there. But immediately everyone knows there's a bomb inside the wheelchair, which seems...
Yeah, that was so weird. It would appear as there was this elaborate stage to set up Supes to be yet another, you know, he's really a bad guy, he's just blown up Congress. But immediately they go over the top of it by saying it was the dude in the wheelchair. You're like, what was the point of that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless they don't like disabled parking at the Congress. I don't know.
Possibly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, what's happening with Bruce? Bruce has lots of dreams. He has more dreams than Inception in this film.
Very insightful Batman we get in this film, don't we, lads? Jeez.
Yeah. This is one of my problems with the film. The number of dream sequences that are in it, especially the one he has about a possible future and a possible message and warning that he receives. Speaking of, you know, one sledgehammer from Mr. Snyder earlier, I think this was the beginning of another one where it's like, yes, you're going to get a Justice League film, and here's how. And it just seemed... I thought... When that particular dream sequence happens, as he's, oh, look, I'm just going to download this stolen data from LexCorp Enterprises and I'm going to nod off and have a dream about this horrible post-apocalyptic future. And oh, look, there's the Flash sending me a warning. And it's like, why did they put that sequence at that point in the film? It just, oh. Sorry,
now, rambling. Point of order, I wasn't sure if that was the Flash because he didn't really look like the Flash.
Well,
I thought Cyborg. That's what I was going with.
Well, see, I thought I noticed that he was wearing a red costume, and he was kind of coming based on, you know, what little I've read of the Flash and what I've seen in the TV show. I assumed that it was a Flash, and he'd broken through the time stream, you know, as he does sometimes with his super speed. He'd come back to give Bruce the warning.
That was my Bruce's, take on that. In Bruce's dream.
Dream.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So just to be clear, what we saw in this future was Superman has soldiers everywhere who are happy to execute people. Mm-hmm. Batman is dressed in his dusty desert gear. And
Desert Storm Batman.
Desert Storm Batman.
Desert Storm Batman.
Yeah.
Awesome. And there are parademons flying around, and there's a great big Omega symbol carved into the earth, and there's sort of looks like there are fire pits in the distance. So yep. Obviously the big baddie they're building up, Black Manta.
Wait, I was thinking Starro. Isn't that what brought the Justice League together originally? Starro? But yeah, it looks like it's going to be Darkseid.
Darkseid.
Yeah.
Yep. But it was all like, gee, Bruce is having so many dreams and all his anxieties are in his dreams. It's very, very strange.
Mm. Yeah. I know Batman's a tortured soul, but yeah, I think they could have cut out at least one, not really a dream sequence, but I guess a psychotic talking to himself episode that Clark had later in the film, and I really don't think we needed the flashback to the death of the Waynes. I think we could have done away with that, and we could have had the future possible vision appear later at the end of the film. Maybe that's just me. That's just, you know.
Yeah.
I thought that they could have used the message as it was intended, that it was a deliberate message from the future, from the team, telling Batman, hey, you need to get the team together now, and that be the premise for setting up the Justice League.
But this brings us to the most exciting part of the film, and that's... I'm not joking, actually. I think my highlight of the film was that file that Bruce stole from LexCorp. And so he goes to that party where he meets Clark, and Wonder Woman's there in her cocktail gown wandering around. And, yeah, Bruce goes downstairs, and because LexCorp has no video security, he's able to plant this server.
Not a single security camera to be seen. Bruce Wayne's good, but not a single security camera.
And I mean, this is before Mercy dies, and she even follows him downstairs and says, what are you doing? He says, I'm looking for the bathroom, and then he leaves and she doesn't even check it out. So I'm just hanging around these servers. And then when he goes back to get the device, which has been downloading programs, Diana has stolen it and run away with it in her Porsche or whatever it is. And then later she gives it back to Bruce, and then he has a look at what's on it because she can't decrypt it, but he's Batman, so he's got the computer for that.
Of course.
And within that are four files which are on, well, first there's the information about something called the White Portuguese, which is so Luther can smuggle the kryptonite into the country. Of course, for some reason he wanted to ask the government's permission to do that, and they said no. Which makes no sense.
At least he tried. All I can say is at least he tried to do it properly. And when he got told no, he's like, no, forget that. I'll just do it anyway.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that Donald Trump would ask the government if he could bring something into the country?
He doesn't like bringing things into his country, does he? Unless it's a wife.
The things he wants.
But yes, the file with the videos and the stuff.
Yes, so he finds out about the kryptonite being smuggled in because it's a suspect rock from another country. There's files there of metahumans. So there's one file in Wonder Woman, which contains the awesome photo of her in 1918, standing next to Chris Pine from Star Trek, who's playing Steve Trevor in the Wonder Woman film, we all know. Mm-hmm. The other file was Cyborg, who looks like... about a quarter of a person being pinned to the wall with all the circuitry around him. And his dad is trying to save his life and saying, I can't do it. And then he has this like Transformery, Cybertron-y type box that he unleashes on.
I was wondering if that was meant to be a mother box. Given that
James has a theory.
Quite clearly, as Paul pointed out, it's a Transformer from the last Transformers movie. So it's Galvatron.
Right.
We've got Galvatron crossing over with the Justice League. And the big bad, everyone thinks Darkseid's coming. It's Darkseid, sorry. It's not. It's Unicron.
Oh, my
God. Orson Welles voiced Unicron.
Wow.
I figured it out, ladies and gentlemen. No need to see Justice League.
I can't wait to see the toy line that comes out for this film.
That would be epic.
Wow.
So you think that's a mother box? Okay, that makes sense. It's a bit bigger than I thought a mother box would be.
Yeah, I guess considering that they're leading up to Darkseid and the parademons and the fire pits and whatnot, the minute I saw that big glowing box, I thought, I wonder if... Because I'm sure that... In the current comics, Cyborg is able to create, use teleportation via Mother Box technology that's in his own systems now. So that was my assumption as to what the glowy Transformery box was.
All jokes aside, but I think that you're spot on with that. Yeah. Mother Box, very similar to New 52 start of Justice League.
Yeah.
That's in the new Justice League animated. They've done two of them now. They're really good. But I think also the actor for Cyborg's dad is the same guy out of Terminator 2.
Correct.
That started Cyberdyne Systems.
Yes.
So now it's Justice League meets Transformers meets the Terminator.
Oh, my God.
But John Connor turning up.
Wow. My poor wallet at the thought of all that toys stuff.
Good catch, James. Good one. And the third file was the Aquaman file.
Yeah,
or was that the fourth file? Doesn't matter. Some underwater submersible camera things, exploring a shipwreck, and find Jason Momoa with a trident who stabs the submersible and then zooms off and breaks the sound barrier underwater, which is something I've always wondered about the physics of. How do you break the sound barrier underwater? How fast you've got to go? Because sound travels differently in water. Anyway, shut up, Paul.
you're worried about tsunamis. It's comic book science in a movie.
Comic book science, that's right. And what is Aquaman doing in this movie? He's swimming.
Yeah.
That's right. He's swimming.
Yeah.
What makes Aquaman unique, I think, out of all the Justice League members, is he can go to the toilet most of the time whenever he feels like it.
Now, that's the superpower I can get behind. Not literally, though, because...
If they need to find him, they just scan the sea and get little hot spots and, oh, there he is.
It's literally a game of warm, cold, warm.
Paul Murrah. That's poor lady.
Yeah.
And then we had the Flash file, which showed, I presume it's Barry in a 7-Eleven getting some milk, and there's a robbery, and he... momentarily zaps over and disables the robber before picking up his milk.
Yeah.
So,
that was fun,
yeah, all of them fairly careless that they all got caught by Luther.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, shall we talk about Diana for a bit?
Yes. Let's. I think she was not used enough in the film.
And conversely, she was probably the best thing in the film.
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
That final big battle scene that we'll get to in a bit, when she arrives there and when she starts kicking butt, it was just so good. And you're kind of like, yes, waited the entire film for this bit. Oh, my God. It was really cool. I mean, yes, it was nice seeing her in, you know, her civilian identity in what few scenes she had. But and I get that it's meant to be a Superman story and it's meant to be the gathering of the heroes. But yeah, they could have done more with her, I felt. And
yeah, I bumped into my wife straight after the film and she said, did she have the invisible jet? And James pointed out that, no, she flies coach, actually.
She flies coach. What is that? She flies coach.
That's true, yeah.
She put in her overhead luggage in.
She was putting it in herself. Yeah, my God. Well, yeah, she must not have a lot of cash. The other weird thing that involved her was the scene when Bruce Wayne emails her and has a scan of her photo from the 1918 shot. And I kind of thought, really? That's a bit convenient. But I know, comic book science and all that, but... yeah, that was, if anything, those four files that Luther had of the other superheroes and, you know, the picture of Wonder Woman from 1918, they actually got me a bit more keen for the other films that are coming.
Yes, definitely.
This film kind of just seemed like part one of a larger story, which was good and bad.
Yeah. There's some pieces to put together there, though, because Luther... By the end, it was apparent that he knew the identities of Clark, Bruce, and Diana, right?
Right.
And he invited them all to his party.
Yes.
Why?
That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. Well, he knew who they were when they were standing there.
Yeah, and it's not like he's going to have them on video surveillance at that occasion, because that was the same place where the computer servers were that, you know, didn't catch Bruce sneaking off to steal from them. So... who knows? That's an interesting point, actually. It's but what did you guys think of Diana? What else did you think of her?
I liked her. I thought she was great. She could have been used more, as you said. I think there was a little bit too much mystery around her character. I mean, like, we heard Ms. Prince mentioned once. She never really introduced herself. She never went by the name Wonder Woman, so there was no mention of that. I mean, Lex had a file which had a WW logo on it.
Yeah.
because he's all about, you know, send it down to the arts department to run up a logo for his files. I think there could have been a bit more. Like, without saying what the ending of the film is right now, she what had one sentence with Superman, perhaps, maybe.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And that was right in the middle of all the big fight scene at the end. So.
Yeah, and most of her interaction was with Bruce, and that was very cryptic, where she was being very mysterious and, you know, stealing his files and running away, then giving them back. And she's just lurking around waiting to do good. And I don't think she had her shield in her overhead luggage, so I don't know where that came from, or her sword. But maybe we'll find out in the next film.
Maybe.
But I really liked her role. There was nothing weird about her character, whereas I think there's a bit of weirdness about Superman and Batman in this film. Namely, Batman's cool with killing people now.
Totally cool with it. Like, it's just something that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an action scene at the start where Batman is chasing the truck which has the kryptonite in it, and at first you're like, oh, no, he's chucking cars, he's towing that car around, oh, he's using it to block those guys, and then later you go, oh, no, Batman doesn't kill people, but the guns on his Batmobile does as he blows up a car with someone in it.
It's an NRA ad, really, isn't it? Guns aren't dangerous, people are. No, it really is.
Yeah. I guess I kind of glossed over that because it's not the first time we've seen a Batmobile or a Bat vehicle with guns shooting at the bad guys.
Well, I forgive it for Tim Burton because Tim Burton doesn't give a shit about Batman. Like, he loves the Joker and he loves weird things and he just wants to make a film about things he loves. Mm-hmm. Whereas Zack Snyder is a self-professed one of us. So he, you know, he thinks about these comics. He's read these comics. He cares about these comics. Tim Burton never did. So I find that much more of a unforgivable sin that Batman is blowing up cars with people in them, even though they're Russian terrorists, so who work for Luther. But that's weird.
But didn't that happen in the Nolan films as well?
No.
When he was on the Batcycle?
No, that's what I was going to say. He's got the weapons. He's got the guns, but it's all about diversions and distractions. No one ever actually dies, to the point in Dark Knight he uses the steel cable to flip the truck that the Joker's in, not to blow it up.
Yep, I'd agree with that.
He shoots through walls, he park cars. Now, Batman loves to kill a park car. That's a completely different story, but you know, he never actually kills anyone. And there's a very strong line in Dark Knight when he's got Joker upside down in the thing, and they're having the conversation about that the one rule being that he won't kill anybody is the one rule he's going to have to break to stop him.
True. Yeah.
And Zack Snyder comes along and you know what? It's not such a big issue anymore. Let's just kill this person that's in the way.
Yes. Yeah. Superman. I'll be honest, in the first half of the film, I was a little scared of Superman. Like, he always looked so miserable. He had the, you know, between his brows was completely crinkled all the time. You know, I've never seen a Superman who looks like it sucks to be Superman more than this one. I mean, even when he's jumping in the bath with Lois, he doesn't look very happy.
Oh, come on. He had a smile in that scene. Who wouldn't? Hell, I had a smile in that scene and I wasn't even in the movie.
Yeah, maybe that's where the R-rated version on video is going to really come into its own.
Ooh, we're just going to go pre-order online.
Yeah, so anyway, Lex's machinations mean that Superman and Batman on a collision course. Both of them are into it, I would say. They're like, they didn't need that much encouragement.
No.
Happy to throw down, aren't they?
Basically, due to the power of the screenwriters, I think Superman was really gunning for Batman, though there wasn't really, you know, of all the things Superman had to focus on, I don't think Batman was number one on his list.
No, I think, yeah, I think Batman had it in more for Superman in this, because he had more of a personal investment with, you know, his employees being wounded or killed in the attack on Metropolis. So, whereas Superman was kind of like, well, I don't really agree with what this Bat of Gotham is doing, and we should do something about it whilst I wag my finger at you. whereas Batman's like, I'm going to build a suit that can kill this guy. And, you know, so, yeah. But, yeah, Lex kind of poured gasoline on the fire, shall we say?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And he brings that to a head where he captures Lois and captures Martha Kent and basically does a exposition speech to Lois and then throws her off one of his buildings. And then Superman catches her, puts her to safety, and then he comes up. And then it's when Lex reveals... Oh, that's right. He shows up to talk to Lex, and instead of just punching Lex in the face, he stands there, you know, hovers at a distance, and Lex... You know, Lex can have all the time in the world to unveil his scheme, etc. Yeah, and then he finds out that Martha's been taken prisoner, and Lex says that he's going to burn her alive. This is meant to be a kids' film? Anyone?
Yeah. I don't think so.
Is everyone having a fun time?
Yeah, but... Lex has timed this because he knows that Batman is gunning for Superman, and Batman has turned on the bat signal, which Superman said, don't turn on that bat signal.
Seems like your parents don't turn that light on.
And so he tells Superman to go and bring him the head of Batman. So, interesting.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think shortly after this, Superman lands in front of Batman and says, we need to talk. And I was face-palming when Batman just started fighting him. It was just like, why wouldn't you talk?
But he had this whole elaborate series of traps set up. You just don't let set up like that go to waste.
God, it's
it was his whole afternoon. It was his whole afternoon setting this stuff up.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think... Yeah, that's kind of what bugs me as well. I mean, to me, Batman's always been about being a detective and using his logic skills to a great extent. And if, you know, I know he says earlier in the film that, you know, Gotham, you know, people, we have a problem with people that, you know, costume freaks that, you know, terrorize us. You know, and I know he's got it in for Superman, but surely he could have stopped and said, okay, this guy wants to talk. Let's talk for a bit. I know that would have saved a whole heap of time, but I get that, you know, he set up all the traps and that was his whole afternoon spent, you know.
But got my stomach traps, I got my gun traps, I got my kryptonite mist, I got my...
Yeah.
How can I have all these cool gadgets if I don't show anyone?
That's right. You know, working the utility belt overtime, really. So, but yeah, it's just... I guess
you get caught off a little bit off guard. I think that I know it's supposed to be Lex Luthor, this, you know, incredible criminal genius that's orchestrated this whole thing. But at the same time, you feel like the Bats has been led down the garden path a little bit, you know, like a sort of common up thug.
Yeah. So they fight for a bit, and then finally, at the end of the fight, they have the conversation they should have had right at the beginning where Superman is choking on kryptonite gas and says, Martha, and Bruce freaks out because his mum was called Martha. He's like, why are you saying Martha? Yeah, that's.
You know. I'd never put that together before. I don't know why, but it wasn't until this movie I worked out their mums have got the same name.
I was exactly the same. I was like, holy
crap.
That's right. Yeah.
How did I not put this together before?
Yeah, so they stop fighting enough for him to say, what? Why are you saying that? And he says, they've got Martha. And then I did an enormous sigh of relief in the cinema when they finally decided to team up and actually converse about the problems and solve them together. And so Superman wants to go rescue Martha, but Batman says, I will go get her, I promise. And so... he goes off to attack the Russian guy whose phone he cloned at the underground boxing match earlier, which was weird. And played by an Aussie, that guy.
Yes.
Yes.
Heartbreak High, Aussie. Aussie. Now there's a throwback.
Wow.
Heartbreak High TV series.
Oh, my God.
Eh?
Wow.
I feel so
who,
old
actually,
now.
When I first saw the trailer for Suicide Squad, I thought that's who they got to play Captain Boomerang. I didn't think it was Jai Courtney. I thought it was this guy. And I'm trying to explain to Paul, oh, you know the Aussie guy with the funny scar on his lip? He's in Heartbreak High. No, he had nothing.
Callum Mulvey. I've looked him up.
Yes, that's him.
Yes. Anyway, so then, yeah, Batman goes off to rescue Martha, which you get the scene that's on the ad, which never been on the ad. And Superman goes to confront Luthor, and Luthor's just in time to arrive because his little zod in the oven is done. But that comes out. And then once again, Super arrives in time to let Lex have a little monologue instead of actually punching him in the face. So then that gives time for Doomsday to be hatched. And then we get a pointless Doomsday fight for the rest of the film. So Doomsday, I'm running down his powers from the comics. He's incredibly strong. He can leap. He can punch. He's covered in spikes. When you damage him, he gets more evolved to be defensive and aggressive. Mm-hmm. So naturally in this film, he had super electrical powers.
And he looks like a giant cave troll from the Lord of the Rings movies. What is up with that? It's like they just copied and pasted him across the CGI.
Now that you mention it, actually, yeah.
And the effect was done by Weta.
Oh, no.
Were they really?
They were.
Oh, my God.
That's crazy. It's like we'll throw some bone spikes on this cave troll and no one will notice.
Jeez.
Now, I would have stood up and applauded the film if when Doomsday hatched, he immediately collapsed and disintegrated. And then the three characters arrested Luthor and went and had a chat. That would have made the film at that point. It would have cost less. It would have been better.
Right.
There's lots of things in this movie, Paul, that would have cost less. That could have been better. I guess that is one of them. Yes, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Instead, we get this fight, which is like, you know, we must have the most explosive-y, lavery, fiery, dusty fight ever. We've got to, you know, everything must be on fire. I want, you know, every particle of oxygen to be on fire in this fight.
I was thinking when it started and they're just throwing Superman around the memorial area of where the ships actually crashed, I thought, oh, maybe they've learned something from Man of Steel and the sort of backlash they got with about the total destruction of Metropolis. And then, no, there goes Superman through an apartment building.
Well, it was just the one, you know.
But they come back with, let's pick up Doomsday and throw him in the middle of what is clearly a petrol refinery station and he blows Scott up.
Yeah. It's like, oh, it's okay. We're fighting at the port. No one's here. Yeah. You know, it's like, still doing a bit of damage, guys. Yeah.
And while we're talking mass destruction, I have a real issue with, at the very start of the film, as Bruce is trying to get to the Wayne Corp building, he says to the guy Jack inside, get everybody out. Is Jack a moron that he hasn't already done this? He is being attacked by aliens and he's like waiting for Bruce to tell him to evacuate.
Yeah. There was a similar scene where when the crashed Kryptonian ship where Doomsday was being hatched, when all the energy was spiking out of that.
Yes, and
someone actually said to Perry White, I think it was, oh, look, there's all this energy discharging from the crashed ship. I'm like, bitch, we're right there. We can all see it.
It's time to leave, people. It is time to leave.
Oh, my God, she said it. Yeah, she said it. It must be true. Oh, look out the window. It's right there.
It's like Metropolitan's very bad at evacuating.
Perry White's just standing there telling everyone to remain calm.
Yeah.
The city was destroyed in the exact same circumstances 2 years ago, but everyone, just remain calm. It will be okay.
Yeah.
Maybe this time everything won't go bad.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. I thought this film would be better than Man of Steel because it didn't have terrible Pa Kent in it with advice to his son of hide away your powers, you know, be special for yourself, not for the world. I'm going to go walk into a tornado and commit suicide now. Thanks, kid.
What was that about?
But he showed up again. So, you know, after the explosion at Congress, Clark walks up onto a mountain in Antarctica or something for no reason. And Jonathan Kent's there, and he offering pearls of wisdom. So he tells him a heartwarming story about how he worked really hard to stop a flood and ended up flooding the Lang's property where their horses drowned.
God.
That was inspiring.
Yeah.
And Yeah, Clark is... he says something to Clark about how, you know, I put you on this path to be Superman or some crap like that, which he didn't. He never put him on that path.
I know, it was so confusing from Man of Steel's, I'm going to commit suicide in this tornado so you don't use your powers, to now Superman was a dead Kansas farmer's dream. It's a bit... I didn't understand. What part was he dreaming of? I don't... It was such a weird contradiction. I didn't get it. It might have been something I missed. I don't know.
You have to really wonder how high up Clark had climbed that mountain and if, you know, lack of
oxygen's a bit thin.
For the brain.
And if he had any chat with his dad, he should have said, Dad, I was just at Congress and I let a whole bunch of people die. High five.
It's a real father-son moment, that, isn't it, really?
Such a cheery film.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the Batman-created kryptonite spear comes in handy to kill Doomsday. Lois gets trapped underwater. Clark goes and rescues her, gets that, and then he has to fly towards Doomsday with the spear. He gets stabbed in the chest, and suddenly we're getting some splash pages from The Death of Superman, which was exciting.
Panel, it was good.
Yeah. And at this point, I decided they're just picking Superman Greatest Hits. Like, they've done a bit of Dark Knight Returns because they had, you know, Superman getting affected by the nuke and going up into space and, you know, looking all cadaverish. And then we're getting The Death of Superman, splash pages from that. So it's a pretty single Greatest Hits exercise, I think, for comic mining. And Superman dies, and presumably there's some discussion between Diana and Bruce about Superman's real identity, because they know that the coffin in Smallville is the real body and the one in Metropolis is empty. I would have liked to have seen that chat, but we didn't get that. And then it ends with Superman's Smallville funeral and Bruce and Wonder Woman there, and Bruce says that he has a feeling they need to put a team together to fight. That's from his dreams earlier, I guess. So he wants to go. He wants Diana's help to go get the other metahumans. Lex Luthor's in jail. He gets his head shaved. Batman goes and threatens him, but then can't hurt him because apparently he's learnt somewhere along the line some lesson that we didn't really understand.
It's not okay to kill people now.
Yeah, yeah. I think by that stage, at the end of the film, he's learnt his lesson from Superman. Or something.
I don't know why. But Lex is raving about something coming, that the bell has been rung and it's going to be answered and there's nothing you can do, which sounds like some vague intimation of Darkseid.
Unicron. It's Unicron.
Yeah, and then we get the end of the film at the funeral, and there's a little bit of movement on the dirt, which implies Superman isn't dead, I guess, on top of his coffin. And Lois gets her engagement ring in the mail, which seems to make her happy, which is the reverse of what would happen to most people I know whose boyfriend just died.
Engagement ring from a dead boyfriend in the mail. It's this happiest day of my life.
And then we get the credits, and there's no end credit sequence, which was another disappointment. A string of disappointments, I felt. So I'm going to say I don't want Zack Snyder involved with the next one.
Fair call.
Yeah.
Fair call.
Look, like I said at the start, I don't want to jump on the negative bandwagon, but all I've done is poke fun at the movie the entire way through. But also to be clear that the things that are wrong with this movie are nothing to do, I think, with the actors. I think every actor did a fantastic job with the characters they were given to do. I'm a little confused as to why Lex Luthor has gone all Jokerish on us. I'm not real sure what that was about. But the whole tying up Arthur with the witch written on her head, the Polaroids, it was very Jokerish. And I was like, I guess they can't have two business tycoons going up Superman. They've already got Bruce Wayne going up the Superman. They can't have Lex Luthor doing it as well. But,
Lex's motivation made no sense to me. Like, he seemed to have no personal cost from the Metropolis incident in Man of Steel.
No.
He just seemed to be into creating weapons to hurt Superman for some reason. Then he was obviously insane at some points. He created Doomsday just because. you know, there was very little logical motivation. I mean, I think it would have been a much stronger film if Lex was had some personal cost from what happened in Metropolis in Man of Steel, and this was a vengeance story for him. Instead, they gave that plot to Bruce, which is dumb.
Even if this Lex, you know, the root of all his motivations had been that his father had died in the attack on Metropolis.
Yeah.
That would have been something. Instead, we've got, as you said, Rifty, you know, this Joker-ish kind of best of different Luthor plots. And he's like, yes, I want to, you know, set up planetary defenses because, you know, Superman won't be the only one, as we've seen. Oh, but secretly, I want to, you know, use that technology for my own purposes to, you know, rule the world or whatever. But it was just such a grab bag. And I think having older, bald businessman Luthor, as we've known for so many years, from the get-go would have been far more interesting. And you're right, Paul. There was nothing that we know of that he lost in the last film. It was just like, I'm the villain, watch me go.
Thinking on that point, and Paul's explanation of the speech that you get from Lex Luthor at the end, this rambling to no one about this threat coming from outer space, makes me think maybe he's been touched or influenced by Darkseid in some way that's made him go a bit loopy.
Yeah.
But again, there's no... That's just a leap that I'm making. There's no indication of that throughout the movie at all.
Yeah.
He should be DC's Loki. Like, he should be a character that people really enjoy his evilness. You know, he should be smart and witty and, you know, ahead of the heroes, you know, and a real challenge to defeat, you know, by his machinations. But, you know, nothing made sense. There was no, like, he has every reason to be the number one champion in the world against Superman because of what happened in Man of Steel, all that destruction. That, you know, there's no better reason for him to be anti-Man of Steel than to say, you know, this guy's from space, he's incredibly powerful, incredibly dangerous, I need to save mankind.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Instead, you know, we never got that.
Exactly.
I don't know what we got.
well, we got a movie of some sort.
Yeah, but, I mean, Well, I've got to decide whether to take my son. It's 2.5 hours long. I think, honestly, he's going to be bored in the first half. There's a couple of bits I'll be uncomfortable about, you know, him seeing as far as one of Bruce's dreams where he's in his parents' crypt and the bird's out. That's a jump scare. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my son hates jump scares. So, this is a Batman Superman movie that I'm not sure if I would have taken an 11-year-old to. What does that say about what they're doing?
Yeah, it's...
I think that's the problem with this vision that they have for these movies, Man of Steel and now Batman vs. Superman. That is really the problem. It's a Batman-Superman movie that you're questioning whether you want to take kids to it, which I think misses the whole point of who these characters are. Now, nobody wants to take their kids to Deadpool and nobody should take their kids to Deadpool. It's incredibly inappropriate. But for the character, it's spot on. It is absolutely spot on.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it works for Batman and Superman.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. And it struck me this morning as I was heading to the cinema that I go to every Marvel movie really relaxed and comfortable because I know I'm going to get a Marvel movie and they're good at what they do. Every DC movie I go intense. This is, what, the fourth bad DC movie in a row? I mean, that's my personal opinion. Like, we've had Green Lantern, we've had Dark Knight Rises... we had Man of Steel and now this one. And this is the fourth time I've been disappointed in a row. I haven't really been happy with a DC movie since The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to go to DC movies with that fear. You know, I wish they had their shit together and I knew I could go there happily and go, hey, I'm seeing a DC movie. Hey, the new DC movie's out. Everyone, let's go see the DC movie, which is routine for Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the feeling you have. You're going, I'm going to see a Marvel movie. That represents this type of quality and this type of entertainment. Whereas, you know, Marvel seem to have staked out the entertainment side of superheroes and DC go, we've got only got the dark space left. Let's do the dark thing. You know, oh, we can't be too entertaining because we're going to be dark, and you know that way we're not doing Marvel's trick,
yeah.
And we can't have end credit scenes because that's Marvel's trick. So,
bleh. Yeah, it's not excellent points, both guys. I, as much as I love DC, it's disappointing that you know, this isn't a family film, even though the characters themselves are marketed to all ages.
Yeah,
but it seems like DC is determined to say, no, only this age and upwards can go and see it in the cinemas. And but hey, look, over here, we've got toys and cartoons and animated movies for everyone else. And it just seems... And I know Marvel does similar things. They have, you know, animated versions of you know, their big movies and that. But yeah, it seems too scattershot in terms of reaching a unified audience, if that makes sense. To me, yeah, as much as I love DC, there's too many different versions of the characters, and that doesn't help in my eyes either. It's just too scattershot, and disappointing. Yeah.
Well, thank goodness we have The Flash and Supergirl. That's all I can say.
That's what, yeah. I mean, you know, TV. I mean, Paul, you've said you love watching The Flash with your family, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, now we've got another version of him on the big screen. It's like, really? Why? You know? And we know it's going to be a dark version just by their track record. So, you know.
Yeah. And
it's so weird that DC seem to get the TV front of things so right, but fall short with the movies. Now, I haven't seen Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for quite some time, but it seems as though Marvel missed the point of the TV things, but get the movies so right.
Yeah,
I'd put the Netflix stuff in a different category, but that's for a different audience again.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, the you're quite right, actually. I forgot about the Daredevil and Jessica Jones. They were very good. They were very well done.
True, yeah.
But again, not for families. I wouldn't feel comfortable showing Daredevil to my 11 and 9-year-old.
Yeah, but by the same token, it's kind of like they haven't said, okay, here's TV Daredevil and here's movie Daredevil. It's
True.
This is the product in terms of viewing him on a screen. It's, you know, it just seems more, I don't know. DC, you've disappointed me.
Yeah. Well, with Nolan, you've got the Dark Knight series that, you know, tries to set up the dark side of having superheroes in your world.
Mm-hmm.
Zack Snyder starts off with the whole, you know, Superman and connections to, you know, Jesus and God and religion and all those sort of things, and just beats you over the head with it until, you know, the bigger issues. What if this person actually turned up? Yes, they are very big moral issues, but just relax and have some fun with it.
Yeah.
Entertain us.
Yeah, to the point that the weapon that they use at the end to finish off Superman is a spear. Now, I'm not a student of theology, but I do understand what the Lance of Longinus was, and it's like, just let up on the religious connections, please.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys know the Lance of Longinus? I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but
It's the spear that pierced Jesus' side when he was on the cross. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it then, you know, became, you know, supposed to be the spear of destiny that, you know, mm-hmm. Was in the touched on in the Constantine movies with Keanu Reeves. That,
very big in the Justice Society comics too, because Hitler used it to keep superheroes out of Germany.
Yeah. There's big, you know, with all the stuff that Hitler was supposed to be collecting, occult figures mm-hmm. and all this sort of stuff. Hellboy touches on it as well. And so just let up. We understand the implications of if Superman was real and he showed up, you know, in New York or whatever, there'd be some big discussions about whether he's good or bad. But just ease up, dude. Just ease up.
I think, interestingly enough, I saw a trailer for Captain America: Civil War before my session of Dawn of Justice.
We did too, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that film's going to touch on similar ideas about, you know, hey, these superpowered people are running around and causing all this havoc and damage, and we need to rein them in and, you know, do something about it. But that still looks like it's going to be a lot more enjoyable
than what
we just sat through today. So
yeah, I didn't feel this film had any standout action set piece or thrilling hell yeah moment that wasn't spoiled by the trailers.
I think them having Doomsday in the trailer was a big mistake.
Totally unnecessary. It added, yeah. I mean, no one knows who he is outside of us comic people.
Yeah.
And the implications of him aren't understood. And to see him in the trailer, you go, oh, okay, well, that's from the final part of the film then. And it didn't need to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could totally have left that in the dark that he was going to turn up at the end.
Exactly. That would have, because to me, as I was watching it, you know, and they kill Superman off, and it's like, you know, I should have thought that was probably going to happen, seeing Doomsday in the trailer. But I was kind of surprised, to be honest, that they did do that at the very end.
Yeah.
But it made perfect sense, because as you said before, Paul, you know, it was like a grab bag of different Superman plots. And so if they hadn't shown Doomsday in the trailer, it kind of, yeah, it should have kept him in the dark. And, you know, I will say, though, that the scene where Batman rescues Martha Kent, the fight scene against the dozen or so thugs and that, I really enjoyed that.
Yes. Yeah. I was saying to Paul, that is a very Batman-esque style fight.
Exactly.
Very Batman-y. Very Batman-y.
That was so
very
well
Arkham
done.
Asylum, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I've got to admit that I did enjoy the very few last moments of the fight against Doomsday, where they finally teamed up and were working together. You know, you had Wonder Woman, you know, actually using the lasso to hold Doomsday in place, and you know, Batman shooting him with, you know, the kryptonite gas grenade things, and Supes flying with, you know, killing himself flying in for the deadly blow with the spear. You know, that was kind of cool, but it just, I was disappointed that, as cool as it was seeing the Trinity of DC on the screen, it wasn't like, yeah, the Trinity of DC, man. It was just, okay, yeah.
Then, and yeah. I've never thought I would see Batman handle that many guns. Throughout the film, he had guns for every occasion. It was just ridiculous. I mean, I remember that speech in the comics where he says to Robin, you know, this is the weapon of our enemy. We do not use it. We are not, you know, we need to understand it, but it is not our weapon. And this, the bit where he's teaching Robin how to throw guns, and they're practicing throwing guns for an hour. You know, but in this, he had so many damn guns, like pulling him out for all occasions. So that was weird.
At the docks where the kryptonite's being unloaded and he's up on top of the crane with what appears to be a huge sniper rifle, I thought, oh, great, Batman's just going to shoot all of them. I was a little relieved that it was just a tracking device. I'm like, oh, thank God. But I thought he was just going to sit up there and just pot them off. It was weird.
Yeah. Mm. I kind of forgave the use of guns in the dream sequence warning scene on the ravaged Earth, because I kind of thought, that's a dream sequence. Okay, I'll let that go. But yeah, as the film goes on, it's like, yeah, he's really got a lot of guns in this, you know?
I think in the dream sequence too, I think it would have had more emphasis to drive home the point that everything's gone to shit.
Yes.
At that point. But if there was no other guns in the rest of the movie, it would have made that point a lot stronger. Yeah. Because that ends resorting to using guns. That's how bad things have gone.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agree.
All right. Any little things you want to shout out about? I like the Batmobile. I thought it was a good Batmobile. I'm hoping to find a little toy of it that I can put on my shelf.
I'll say again, the acting from the people in this movie was fantastic. As much as I didn't like the Joker-esque Lex Luthor, I think Jesse Eisenberg did a great job. I thought he pulled it off quite well. Mm-hmm. The little smiles from Gal as Wonder Woman when she's getting bashed around by Doomsday were fantastic.
Yes.
She just gets thrown across 10 city blocks and she's just smiling like, oh yeah, this is what it's all about. I thought they were fantastically placed little bits that you're just like, yeah, this chick's a warrior princess. Yeah. She's loving this.
Yeah.
I thought Jeremy Irons did a great job. He had a few little tiny almost bits of humour, as did Diane Lane when she said, when he said, "I'm a friend of your son's," and she said, "Oh, the cape, yeah." That was almost a joke in the film. Yeah. Well done. Yeah,
there were a couple of humorous moments in the film. They are there, but they're few and far between. Yeah, look, overall, it's an okay film. It's not completely terrible, but it's disappointing that it didn't wow me, which is what I wanted from DC's three biggest heroes. I guess, in a way, I'm keen to see what the future holds for the DC. Now that we've seen, you know, the files that Luther had, and we know we're getting Wonder Woman's film, isn't it in a couple of years or next year?
Next soon-ish. Year.
Anyway, yeah. But a lot of this film, to me, was just like, okay, yeah, that's happening. That's happening. Yeah, there weren't a lot of moments that made me want to jump out of my chair and cheer them on. It just kind of happened, which in a way is disappointing.
It's how do you stuff this up, really?
Yeah.
Really? How do you do it? Anyway, I'm looking forward to Suicide Squad. I think the trailers for that have been much better. It seems to have staked out its claim on humor much better. Mm-hmm. You know me, I'm a big fan of Suicide Squad, always have been. This is a bit more of a heavy hitter version than I'm used to, but I think it'll be good.
Yeah.
I think I've got a lot more trust in the people involved with Suicide Squad than I did with the Snyder Goya.
Axis
of Evil.
Yeah, the squad movie actually looks fun, which is, I think, what the DC films need.
I think the Squad movie, the trailers for that make it look like what it's supposed to be.
Mm.
Ragtag bunch of criminals that, you know, it's okay for these people to kill people because they're the bad guys. We're not supposed to get that from Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
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 Anyway, any final thoughts? Or we've done it.
I think we've done it. I think we've doomsplaining it as best we can. I think we're all in agreement that it's not perfect, but it's okay.
Yeah. And there were no cameos by the Doom Patrol. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, that was a shame.
It could have been the one thing they got right.
Well, yes.
But it's funny, the DC movie universe is not crawling with superheroes yet, compared to the TV shows. It'd be nice if that started to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Oh, well, can't win them all.
Yes, so I give it a 4 out of 10.
Wow. 4?
4, yep.
I'm not as critical as that. I'll go with you, Mike. I reckon a 7 out of 10. It's got all the elements. Like the acting is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It looks really good, but it just misses the mark. I think it misses the point, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Too much Batman versus Superman, not enough Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, nicely put. Yeah.
That could be a pretty good point, actually. Yeah.
Okay, that's all, I think.
That's it. I think we've done it.
All right. Thanks, Riff, for being on the show. Thanks, James. It's been awesome to have you here.
Yes.
As awesome as it is to use your house every week, it's great to talk to you about this stuff as well. If you want to get in touch with us on Twitter, you can talk to Wilfred at WFDpod. Send us an email on waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And we've got the Facebook page. There's a little bit of action there occasionally. And don't forget, we've got Jay Torres coming up next week, which we're really looking forward to.
Woohoo!
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, cool. Guys.
See you next time.